The following is a presentation of the American College of Osteopathic Internists.
Hello, and welcome to the American College of Osteopathic Internists Annual Convention and Scientific Sessions. This year's meeting was held in conjunction with the Annual Clinical Assembly of the American College of Osteopathic Surgeons. The meeting was held October 11th through 15th, 2017, and featured nationally known speakers covering a wide variety of topics of interest to the practicing physician. The meeting was held at the Gaylord National Resort and Convention Center in National Harbor, Maryland. The program chair is Dr. Annette Karen, and the theme for this year's presentations is Goldilocks Medicine, Not Too Little, Not Too Much. Establishing and operating a successful concierge practice is presented by Ms. Sheila Mintz.
So, how many of you are in private practice? Are you, everyone's in private practice pretty much? So I guess, my question is how happy are you with your level of reimbursements and the amount of time you have to spend with on overhead and all of that kind of stuff? So. Generally not too, I get that idea. So well, basically, what they've asked me to speak about, can everybody hear me okay? Yeah, okay, because I think I've got two microphones on here. What they want me to talk about today is concierge practices. And it's kind of an interesting concept, and it's been floated around for a long time. And it's sort of an alternative to traditional, insurance-based practice, generally in the primary care family practice area, although they're moving into some specialty practices like cardiology. I've even heard something about concierge for surgery, although I'm not quite sure how that would work, because I think the general, first assumption is that you have an established practice with people that are going to need to come in with some level of frequency, as in direct primary care or a family practice where you have people with, a variety of different illnesses that are going to need to come to the doctor at least several times a year. So the first thing to start out with is, having that practice available. I think it's harder to start a concierge practice having no practice established. But once you have that, you can, I don't think it's impossible, particularly in a rural area, but I'll talk about that a little bit later. So there's different models that are available on the retainer-based or cash-based practice. The first one is kind of the most common thing, and that's the hybrid concierge practice, where you have both a concierge where you take a retainer payment, and then basically and then you still keep taking some of the insurance reimbursements and things like that. And there's some levels of issues that we're going to go into on that with some other, with explaining some of that. And then some of my clients have done separate concierge practices, two separate entities, one entity that would just do concierge and just do basically cash-based services, and then the other entity would be a separate, just traditional medicine, with insurance payers. And then there are other practices that have just a sole concierge practice model, where the patients pay a certain retainer fee for the entire year and basically don't pay anything else. And then there's another model which is coming up with some, is becoming a little bit more popular. It's a direct primary care model, which is a little bit more cost effective than the traditional concierge and can be done in a lower income or a more rural area that's gaining some popularity. So this is a graph from Medscape that shows the different types of where physicians are practicing. So right now the top block you can see is concierge practice. So there are only about 4% of private physicians that are currently in concierge practices, and that comes out to about 4,000 to 5,000 physicians, you know, across the United States. So I mean, it's gaining some in popularity. I think you know, people are really thinking about what they can do to enhance their reimbursements as reimbursements go down, as billing becomes, you know, much more complicated. I know that there's been some presentations already on the joys of MACRA and MIPS. And for those of you that are Medicare practitioners, and probably most of you are, that bundled payment and episodes of care and all of that just creates more and more, you know, overhead and more billing complications. And then the other fun stuff going on, at least in my area, I practice mostly in New Jersey and New York, and some in Pennsylvania. And there's a lot of Medicare audits right now, a lot of third-party payer audits. So, you know, I think that that's created a whole sense of tension in addition to reduced reimbursements of trying to find some alternatives. So one of the alternatives to consider is the, this is sort of the common concierge practice, you know, hybrid model. A lot of, maybe some of you have heard of, the company that I've heard of the most and have worked with some on doing concierge models is MDVIP. And they kind of come in and help you transition into a concierge practice. But basically what happens is that you're able to reduce the number of people that you have, your patient population from, I would anticipate most direct primary care or family practices have at least 2,000 to 3,000 patients, active patients at any period of time. Is that about true for most of you? So, yes, okay. And so basically this lets you bring down you have to dismiss patients essentially from the practice who are not willing to pay the concierge fee, so they pay. So the people who are staying are paying, you know, somewhere around $1,500 to $2,500 a year, and that reduces. That allows you to make some money on top of what you're getting in reimbursement. You know, it does enhance the quality of life. You're seeing fewer people. You're much less on a, you know, feeling like you're on a treadmill or on one of those hamster wheels, you know, on a conveyor belt with patients. So it does provide some of that assistance. But I know that, you know, and I'll address this later. But I know a lot of the doctors that I've worked with on this, you know, their major concern has been, well, you know, I've been in practice and I've been treating these people for 10, 15, 20 years, and I know them and I know their families, and it's very hard for me to say to them, no, I'm not going to see you anymore, you know, if you can't pay me $1,500. So that's, you know, that's just kind of the ethical and moral issues that go along with doing that. But it does, but the idea of the concierge is it allows you to reduce your patient population. You do continue to participate in commercial payers and in Medicare if that's what you, if you're doing that. The retainer basically covers access to the physician that's not provided in or not, you know, paid for by the third-party payers. So you can answer emails at 3 o'clock in the morning. You can respond to physicians to patients via Skype. You can provide them with all kinds of different other active services, you know, different coordination of their care with other specialists. The services that you provide under the retainer model cannot be covered by insurance, so I'll have to go into a little bit in depth of how that gets kind of tricky. But the hybrid model lets you basically go into a concierge practice and kind of get your feet wet and see how it's going to work out for you and whether you feel comfortable with this, whether you're able to maintain the practice before going into a full concierge model, or you can stay with the hybrid model if you feel like it's working for you. One of the things that I think is kind of an interesting idea, although I haven't seen it happen yet is when they talk about different other specialties going into concierge, like cardiology or surgery or something like that, would be to have a concierge practice that's multidisciplinary, where you'd have a number of primary care physicians working with certain specialists that would be sort of a group practice. I think that would be an interesting concept, but I don't know that anybody's done it yet. For the hybrid practices, as I said, the major problem that I've seen is the services cannot be, that you're providing under the retainer cannot be covered by insurance. So I had a client who decided that she was going to do a concierge practice, and luckily she sent me the letter that she was planning to send to her patients before she actually sent it out. And it was kind of a letter explaining, you know, how difficult it was for her to practice and how her reimbursement levels had gone down so much and that she really couldn't maintain her level of practice and the services that she was providing without making some additional money, and therefore she was asking her patients to, you know, kick in another $100 a month or something like that as sort of a membership fee. And, you know, I said to her, well, if you want to do this, you can, but I think it's a very good way to go to lose your medical license, because you're going to run into a problem, because Medicare is going to say that you're not, you know, you're balance billing patients. This is a direct violation of Medicare regulation, and it's also probably a violation of all of the payer agreements that you have with third-party payers. So I said, you really have to tailor it to the access that is not provided under your payer agreements or under Medicare. So things like 24-hour access to physicians, emails, house calls, you know, same-day or no-wait appointments. Otherwise, you can run into this problem of violating your payer agreements. And I'm sure, as you know, as many of you know, that your payer agreements basically say that you are in compliance with every single law on the face of the earth. Okay, so if you're not in compliance with Medicare regulations and you have a third-party payer agreement, say, with a Blue Cross Blue Shield entity, they find out about, you know, the balance bill, even if it's not against their payer agreement, you're already in violation because you're in violation of a different regulation. They can then come in and start trying to recoup from you. So it really does become very complicated. And if you decide to do it, it would make sense to have someone guide you through it. You know, I know this MDVIP, and there's a couple of other companies that do this as a sort of a turnkey operation and help people go through it. But I wouldn't just rely on MDVIP or one of these groups to provide you with the correct advice on what services that you provide, what you're planning to provide, and how that's going to be compliant with a concierge model. So those things are, you know, extremely important, and you don't want to violate those if you're going to do it. Another thing that people have been doing with concierge and hybrid in the hybrid practices is offering some, in addition to, and the previous speaker sort of alluded to this in terms of, you know, YouTube videos and wellness coaching and some telemedicine services that would not be paid for by insurance. Now, sometimes telemedicine is paid for by certain payers and it's not paid for by others. So it's kind of an area of practice, an area of law, an area of insurance that's got some you know, waves, and it's being paid for in some areas but not in others. But it certainly makes sense to look at, and I think being able to provide, especially for osteopathic physicians who have the more holistic training, that it's very nice for you to be able to provide that information to your patients and give them some general wellness and coaching on nutrition and various types of health questions. But when you do that, if you're providing information to patients on that. You need to be really careful. I wouldn't make a direct patient-to-patient or physician-to-patient contact via YouTube, because you still have, even in a direct concierge practice where you don't have some of the insurance regulation issues involved, you do always have HIPAA concerns and cybersecurity concerns. So you are going to be, if you are going to be communicating with a patient via Skype or via some other type of internet method, you really do need to be concerned about the cybersecurity and making sure that you're maintaining their private health information in a compliant way. So whenever you think about that, always think first HIPAA and cybersecurity. But there's some interesting ideas that some of my clients have come up with, and we're working on providing them with some internet capacity to be able to continue the extra care to the patient in terms of providing wellness and other kinds of encouragement and support for different types of chronic conditions. Sorry, this is not made for the altitudinally challenged person. Another option for this is the concierge and traditional practice sort of split up the entity. So instead of just having one entity that sort of does both, you have two separate entities. One entity, one practice with a physician or a couple of physicians that just see concierge patients, and another entity which sees traditional medicine patients, traditional insurance payer relationships. So it kind of lets you have the best of both worlds. Having separate entities is going to make it a little bit easier to make sure that you're not going to be in some of the insurance violation balance billing situations that you might have with a hybrid practice. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay. So this makes it slightly easier. I think the probably the issue is really more of a physical, like, practical method of how do you do this. So if you have patients that are coming in and they're in the concierge practice, well, they're going to expect not to sit in your office for 15 minutes or 20 minutes or a half an hour before they see you. They're going to expect to be at the front of the line, basically. So you don't want to create this kind of upper class and lower class among your patients where it becomes obvious to the patient, because then you're going to get disgruntled patients, and that's not good for anybody. So, people that have done this have basically, they have an office layout which sort of, either they stagger the hours so that the concierge hours are at a different time than the traditional medicine hours, or they have they can have two separate waiting rooms. It depends on the layout of your practice, but I think it's going to be difficult when you kind of if you have everybody sort of lumped together and the lower level, the proletariats of the practice see that the upper class is getting better treatment, even though they may know that it's not a it's a separate practice and all of that. It causes some problems, and that's been a concern that that some of my clients have dealt with in various ways. But you'd have to know what is going to work for the layout of your particular office and how your office hour works. If you're there 2 or 3 days and you can do 2 days of a concierge practice and then 3 days of a traditional practice, that might work well. Or it really depends depends on what works for you. So then there's the traditional concierge practice, which is basically only a retainer-based practice. So the patient pays X amount of dollars per year, and that's it. Where that is going to be most implemented is in very high-income areas. I was just reading an article about a physician in Silicon Valley where, of course, there are very, very high net worth, high earning people, and they pay the physician a retainer, the families pay a physician a retainer of $85,000 a year, And they get all of their primary care. The physician is on call for them 24/7. The physician will coordinate all of their care. This particular family, I think the one of the children, they were skiing someplace in, let's say, Vail or Aspen, and one of the children broke their leg. They called the physician, and they said, well, we're going to take him to the ER, and he said, no, you're not going to take him to the ER, and he got the child in to see the top orthopedic specialists at whatever hospital was local to that, and so he was able to facilitate that. So in addition to providing primary care, that physician provides all kinds of like entrees and access to very highly qualified experts, and is able to do that for people. There are not a lot of people in the United States that can afford to pay $85,000 or $100,000 a year to their physician, but some people can, and if that works for them and for you, then that may be a great way to go. But again, that's kind of an unusual situation for most physicians and most families. This direct primary care model is becoming actually a lot more popular. It's strictly a cash-based practice. Essentially, it's like for those of us who are old enough to remember when dinosaurs roamed the earth, it's like it used to be in the olden days. There was one doctor, and the doctor had, his or her spouse, and maybe a family member, or maybe just, a secretary or an assistant, and maybe had a nurse, so there would basically be three people in the office or four people in the office. And you'd have, just the one or two physicians and one or two staff. So with a direct primary care model, you may not be, making as much money as you would be on a retainer model, but you also don't have the overhead costs that go along with very expensive experts in billing, coding, and collections that you run into now. So basically what happens is that there's no annual retainer, but there's a general sort of a monthly stipend that gets paid to the physician, and that may be $50, that may be $100. And then after that, the patient, when they come in, they pay another $50. So it's essentially not very much different than what a copay would be with regular insurance. So it kind of has worked in a lot of situations. I've only had one client who's done that, and she's kind of a special. I mean, in New Jersey, it's pretty. Where I live in New Jersey is pretty. High cost of living, high property taxes, so it's hard to do the same thing that you might be able to do in a more rural or a community where cost of living is less. But she had a spouse who was doing quite well, and so she was able to kind of tailor her practice to the way that she wanted to practice, and had sort of a part-time and was working strictly on a cash basis, and it really worked very well for her. She actually went in and just started the practice in a pretty high-end area, and started direct primary care, just $50 a month and $50 for a visit, and really was doing fine, probably making a comparable amount to what she would have been making in a traditional internal medicine practice as an associate or even as a partner. I mean, I know some practices where the people are not making a lot. So she was probably making $125,000 or $150,000 a year, and that was really fine for her. So she was quite happy with the arrangement. Some people will be good with that, and some people won't. But the thing to remember also is that when you're doing this, this type of arrangement, whether it's the concierge practice or the direct primary care, does comply with the insurance requirements of the Affordable Care Act, which I think as of today is still in effect. Maybe not tomorrow, but we'll find out. But it does comply with those requirements, so you can have a concierge arrangement with a primary care physician if someone enters into that, basically what they do is have, if they're purchasing their own insurance, they purchase a high deductible insurance basically for emergencies, you know, for hospital coverage and things like that. And then that allows them to have coverage in case they do need to go to the hospital, but not pay a lot of co-pays and things like that when they have to go to their regular family doctor. So here's another table from Medscape, and you can see that this goes into, this was actually from an ACO presentation, but I thought it was interesting because it talked about the level of income in concierge practices is actually one of the only types of practice where the physician income has remained relatively stable, and in fact was up a whole percentage point over the past. This was from 2016, but it still shows pretty stable income for concierge and direct pay practices, as opposed to other practices where reimbursement levels are going down. So it's an interesting concept, but it's something that you have to be careful about. So the pros of a retainer-based practice are pretty obvious. I'm sure most of you feel that you're on a treadmill all day long. You know, you have 10 minutes if you're lucky to see a patient. For those of you that are hospital-based, you may have less time to see a patient. I know probably for the patient experience, at least on my end of the, on my end of the relationship, sometimes I'm in there and, you feel the physician comes in and they're already, they've already got one foot out the door. So I don't think it's a satisfying method of practice for either for the physician or the patient. And I think having the concierge practice and reducing the number of patients and increasing the amount of time that you're able to spend with your patients is certainly a good thing. If you're working in a cash-based practice only, then you can reduce your staff, reduce a tremendous amount of overhead, all of the time and effort that you need to spend on paperwork, on overhead for billing and collection, coding, all of those things that you won't have to do anymore, which frees up a huge amount of your time to actually be able to practice medicine, which I'm sure for all of you would be a very nice thing. Having a hybrid model kind of lets you find out about it, lets you feel like whether this is going to work for you, gives you a sense of yes, maybe I should go forward with this. And then, before you do, or just say, okay, this is an extra way for me to make some extra money, and leave it at that. And then you can really pretty much keep the same level of income, or as you see from the previous slide, you can slightly even increase your level of income, or perhaps not lose money, which would also be a nice thing. Oops, is that it? I missed one. All right, back. Okay, so here are the cons of retainer-based practice, and I think what my clients have struggled with the most is really what happens to the other patients. That's been that's sort of been the thing that people have taken the most to heart and have been the most concerned about. Some of my clients have gone forward with doing a retainer-based practice anyway, or have split off into the concierge entity and then the separate traditional medicine entity, where you can sort of shift over the patients that are not able to pay the retainer. Everybody's concerned about the level of the shortage of primary care physicians. I mean, there's a general physician shortage, and there's a real shortage of primary care physicians. So, what happens to the people that you're not seeing anymore? I know that that's been a real concern. When you go into a hybrid practice, you have the same insurance billing and collection issues that you do currently. And I think even more than the overhead, my concern is always not violating Medicare regulations when with balanced billing issues, and not violating your payer agreements, because as we all know, and I'm doing a presentation on audits and investigations tomorrow, but as we all know, there's some very aggressive investigating going on, and that I think is something where you really need to tread very lightly and get a lot of really good advice before you make that decision. And then, you know, the con of it also is that you don't have any stream of insurance money coming in that you can count on. So if, you know, your patients dry up, if there's a recession and they can't do it anymore, you know, if there's any number of things that could happen where people are not able to continue paying a retainer or making cash payments for medical services, then that also affects your income. And I've heard about at least doctors in during the Depression in the 1930s, you know, would take their payments in farm animals and eggs and chicken and stuff like that. But I don't know that that's going to pay your property taxes or your mortgage. So so that kind of it creates a problem for you guys also. So those are kind of the things that I have to say about this. Are there any questions? No questions. Wow. Okay, a question. Yay. Well, getting testing done is still going to be covered by traditional insurance. So your services, if you're strictly on a cash-based, then you're strictly on cash-based, but they need to have insurance. Either they pay for the testing, unless you're not going to be able to do most of that in your office, probably. That might be something that you could include in your office, but if you're sending things out to test or to Quest or LabCorp, or you're getting MRIs or X-rays or anything like that, that's something that's going to have to be covered separately by the patient.
So if you need to get a prior approval for the MRI, you have to charge the patient for getting that approval?
No, you wouldn't necessarily charge the patient for getting the approval, but you would, depending on the type of practice you have. Again, if it's a hybrid practice, then that's kind of part of the insurance thing. And then the retainer part is just for services that are not covered by insurance. So part getting the approvals would be part of the service that you would provide under insurance. But if you're in a cash-based, you might charge extra for that. Or if you're just strictly taking cash and not any insurance at all, then that would be part of the service you provide. And you could either build it in as part of, the flat fee or the retainer, or ask people to pay for it separately, because it is, it is kind of a pain in the rear. I agree. I can't really, there's lights in my eyes, so I can't see where you are exactly. Over there, okay, good.
Can you hear me?
Sure. Okay.
Two-part question. First of all, on the hybrid practice, regarding your Medicare patient, so Medicare pays the 80%. So if the patient decided not to get the Part B supplement and just get a Part D, do you use the hybrid practice to basically relieve them of their Medicare 20% based on the hybrid practice?
If they decided, I don't know if you can opt out of Medicare Part A, but you can opt out of Medicare, because Part A is the hospital. Part B would be the physician. You can opt out of that.
I mean the patient. Right. Because we have a lot of patients that may not sign up for Part B supplement, or what they don't know about it. And so with this...
Well, they should sign up for Part D, certainly, because that's drug coverage. And yeah, that you have nothing to do with the drug coverage. So yes, they should do that. If they've determined that they're not going to sign up for Part B, then I don't think that you have the concern that you need to worry about the Medicare regulation in the same way, because they're not going to be covered by Medicare.
No, I'm talking about the patient who are Medicare age, because and they are on Medicare, but they decide not to sign up for Part B supplement, which pays for the remainder of the 20% that Medicare does not cover.
Oh, I see. You mean a gap coverage?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then no, you can't. You can't, because the retainer part of it would not cover it, because you have to. The gap coverage is really not related to that at all. It's what Medicare covers and what Medicare doesn't cover. Even if Medicare doesn't cover the entire payment for it, it still would have to be a service that Medicare itself does not cover. So Medicare, like, does the access and that kind of thing, 24/7 access, would not be covered by Medicare. And then there are certain types of testing that Medicare doesn't cover.
Let me rephrase that, okay?
Okay.
I don't think that you understood the question. For those patients who are Medicare age and have Medicare, okay, most of them, they're all covered by Medicare, which covers 80% of the Medicare established fee to see a physician, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then for those people who have gap coverage, which is Part A through F, or
right.
H, they decide not to get the gap coverage, okay? And we have a lot of patients that has that, where they are previously in Medicare and Medicaid, do eligible but lose their Medicaid, and so now they have to get a gap coverage, okay, to pay for their Part B supplement, the 20% that Medicare does not pay for.
Right.
Can you offer a hybrid practice where you set up a fee to help them and basically act as a Part B supplement gap coverage, so that you take the 80% that Medicare reimburses you from the patient, and then the 20% that you were supposed to charge a patient on the Medicare established fee, that you basically write it off based on the yearly or monthly fee that they pay for the hybrid practice.
Yeah, I understand what you say. No, I don't think that would work. Because...
Are there any laws against that?
I would anticipate that it's an interesting question, and I'd like to look at it. But my gut feeling is that it would still be that Medicare would view it as balanced billing for the services that Medicare would ordinarily cover, even if they don't pay for it fully. That's my gut feeling. Although it's a really interesting question, I have not seen any of that type of model in a concierge-based model. So I would anticipate that the answer to that is that it's no. But if you give me your information, I'll look at it and send you an answer, because it's an interesting question. But I kind of think the answer is no.
Thank you.
Sure.
In your experience, have you ever seen a concierge model within a hospital system where most or all the docs are employed? Have you ever seen a concierge model built within that?
I have not. I mean, I know I haven't seen like a primary care.
Correct.
No.
Do you think that would work?
I mean, I guess it's not. It wouldn't necessarily not work. I would imagine that the hospital would like the money as opposed to having to deal with insurance. Usually the hospital-based practices, you're not employed by the hospital, you're employed by their faculty practice entity, which is the same thing. It's not even directly owned by the hospital. It's owned by, generally, they're directly owned by a physician it's a captive organization. So I don't know if you're employed by a hospital. So usually what happens is that the hospital sets up what they call a captive PC or something like that, which is actually technically owned by a physician who's a board member or something like that that's connected with the hospital. So, I think the same idea would be applicable. I would think that there would be more, that it might be a little bit tricky just because of there's a lot of exempt status issues with the amount that physicians are paid under. You know, if you know about your contract, there's a lot of fair market value language and things like that, that there are issues in terms of to not violate Stark services with hospitals. But I mean, I can see that it's at least conceptually a possibility. Sure.
There's a couple of new things that were pitched to me in the last year, including telemedicine, which kind of is hand in hand with concierge medicine. So my question is, a lot of patients that are Medicare, Medicaid, whatever insurance patients, they want to be seen on a weekend. They want to talk to you at 9 p.m. at night. They want video conferencing with you. And is it admissible that instead of a retainer, you simply charge them a fee for having that 15 minutes of online time with them?
Well, you know, it would be tricky because, again, the conversation that they're having with you is I think the answer generally is yes, but I think it's the way you describe the service when they're paying for you. Like you're providing them with access. You're not, so they may be talking to you about their diabetes or their asthma or, you know, whatever it is, whatever their problem is. So that service that you're providing to them is covered by Medicare. But the fact that you're providing that service at 9 o'clock at night via Skype is not covered by, so it's the access that's not covered by Medicare, whereas the treatment of the disease is. So you'd have to have an explanation of the coverage and what they're paying for, describe like a disclaimer type of arrangement so that they sign off on it to say that what we're paying for on this is the access to you. And whether you do it on a retainer basis or you do it, you know, on a monthly, I mean, most of the practices do it, as sort of a monthly fee. Because then you start getting into, like, if you're doing it per visit type of thing, then you kind of start to blur the lines between what are they paying for the medical service or are they paying for the access. So having the monthly fee and then just having the access makes it, I think, a little bit cleaner. I mean, I don't want to say it's impossible, but I think it becomes a little muddier. And the more you kind of blur the lines is where, you know, you get in trouble. So I would kind of try to, even if you keep it as a small fee, you know, like you don't have to make it $50 a month if that's hard, that may be hard for someone who's on a fixed income who's also paying a ton for their prescriptions. You know, that they pay 50, so make it, you know, 25 or make it 15, whatever you're comfortable, whatever they're comfortable with, to be able to have that, you know, one, you know, or two video Skypes with you at 9 o'clock at night, you know, that kind of thing.
And the reason I bring that up is services like HealthTap are being pushed quite a bit now, which makes it pretty much you tap and go. You make up whole schedules, and I'm just wondering how that might get you into trouble, given they charge their own fee for using that, and then they automatically pay you a fee on top of that. Then you can add to it. It's built right in the programs, but that seems to me something that I don't want to get in trouble with. So,
in the program for telemedicine?
For HealthTap, actually sets that all up for you.
Right. Well, that's a little bit different because that's not a concierge-based.
No, but
yeah, it's so yeah. They would just pay that fee.
Okay.
With the service, and they would pay extra for, because they're actually in that situation, they're not the patient of your practice anymore. They're actually going through, like, you know, MD Live or Teladoc or Talk-A-Doc or Doc on Demand. There's a whole bunch of them. So at that point, they're also a patient of that service. So it wouldn't be violating Medicare rules as their patients of your practice too.
And you could keep them as a standard patient though?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
questions? No more? Oh, well, okay. So thank you very much.